Okay, good morning. This is the February 1st meeting of the Architectural Review Committee. Time is 8:35 and we'll start the meeting. We'll call the meeting to order. Terry, if you can do a roll call, please.
Ken Broadway?
Here.
Greg McKenzie?
Here.
Mark Mundell?
Here.
Scott Yule?
Here.
And Carl Sloan is absent today.
Thank you. I want to review very briefly the purpose of the ARC. There was a discussion at the last meeting that committee would like us to add to the agenda as a standing statement the purpose of the ARC. We didn't get that on this agenda. We will for the next one. But the purpose, if you recall, City Council established the Architectural Review Committee to review development applications that are located within the four architectural districts and to forward a recommendation on about the architecture of those projects to the Planning Commission and, in some cases, to City Council. The committee does not approve any projects. It is only a recommending body. The staff of the city also, from time to time, brings things to the committee for its consideration, especially items that involve architecture. In this agenda today, we have two items. One is a design review for a project, and the other is one of those separate items that's not an application but does have architectural implications. So the next item on the agenda, item three, is citizens addressing the committee, and it looks like we don't have any citizens, which is not uncommon for this group. So I think what we'll do, unless the committee has any questions, is we'll move over to item four. And item four this morning is a presentation by a company based in Florida. Their product is referred to as Zonar. And the reason why staff is bringing this to the committee this morning is there has been some discussion from time to time, both by individual Planning Commission members and City Council members, expressing a desire for having a better sense of what the architectural implications are of a potential rezone absent a project. And it hasn't been a unified statement by either body, but in general, I think what staff has heard is that there would be a preference, at least among some members of each, that potential rezone applications would not come forward absent a specific project and specific designs because of the concern about density, for example, or what are the implications of the rezone and how it would affect the built environment. And, of course, as you know, we don't have anything in the code that currently would require an applicant to come forward with a project. And as you know, under law, private property owners have a right to advance applications with or without a project. And so staff has been trying to think through how can we approach that issue where we're not impeding upon private property owners' rights, but also trying to provide the Planning Commission and City Council more information that can gain them a level of comfort in the decision-making process. It also occurred to staff that from time to time the city advances code changes that might affect it. Individual piece of property or might have citywide impacts. And sometimes it's also difficult to visualize what are the potential impacts of that code change. And again, that's without an application. And so the same conundrum exists. In fact, as you know, we will have some coming forward in the near future where we're looking at rezones related to RENA. And so anticipating those ongoing concerns, staff was approached by a company of this product called Zonar. And we have for you this morning several gentlemen from this company. The lead, I believe, his name is Felipe. He'll be walking us through their product and explaining to you the pros and cons, what it does provide and what it doesn't provide. And so we thought perhaps that could be a middle ground approach. So unless there's additional questions, I was going to turn it over to Felipe. Okay, Felipe, you're up. Hello, Felipe. You're good.
Hi. This is Matt. I think Felipe has a problem with his phone. I'll go ahead and introduce myself. My name is Matt Zavala. I'm a co-founder of the company of Goodix, and I'm actually an architect and urban planner, and I was the original creator of Zonar, of the application. So let me see, I think they're back. Jason, Felipe, you guys there?
Yep, sorry about that, guys.
Okay, go ahead.
So, and then Jason is gonna just lead you very quickly. Jason's our CEO. Jason just joined us on the call as well. We just had an issue with our audio, we apologize. So I'll turn it over to Jason, and then Max will give you guys a quick demo. We'll be respectful of your time, and then we'll happy to answer some questions at the end in the interest of time. So, Jason, please. Okay, I'm not sure what's up with Jason. So I think he's having trouble with audio. I apologize for that. So real quick, Mark, you did see a demo a few weeks ago. And so if you could just really highlight the couple things that you saw that could be helpful so that we can focus on those that you guys are looking at. I mean, you guys did mention the rezoning is a big issue for you. Architecture is really not something that we tried to delve into with Zonar. This is really a zoning application. So if you could just touch upon the other things that really caught your eye so we could focus on that.
Sure. So obviously the rezoning, as you've already described, and I think this committee certainly understands that your product, as you present it, they'll understand that doesn't really get into the specific architectural design. But I do think there are times where we won't have – you know, the city will initiate a rezoning or a code change that has, you know, built environment implications. And so I do think explaining to the committee, you know, how density or setbacks or height regulations and those things can impact, you know, the buildable envelope of a site, and they can at least look at it from a compatibility perspective of the surrounding environment.
Perfect. And then in terms of, there are a couple other features that Zonar has, which is interaction with the public. Many cities call it a front desk. People want to come in, understand what they can build. Is that something that's interesting to you guys as well? Another piece of functionality that Zonar has as well is the development review. So when an applicant comes in with a proposal, that process of seeing if what is being proposed is actually compliant to the zoning code, we've expedited that process because we have the city's zoning code calibrated into our system. Is that something that's interesting to you guys as well?
It is to staff, both the codification and the zoning review, but I'm not sure that it's critical for this committee. That would be more of a back-end piece that we would utilize for efficiency. I really think their focus is the implications to the built environment.
All right, perfect. So without further ado, I will turn it over to Max, and Max will do his thing.
Okay, great. So, thank you, everybody, and once again, Max. And so I'm going to start showing you some of the features based on what we just discussed. Feel free to stop me at any time and ask me any questions. So actually, let's move on to Miami. One of the first things, I mean, I guess a little bit of the very quickly my background. I'm an architect and planner. I've been doing this for over a decade now, and I've been doing rezoning projects around the world on brand new zonings. One of them has been the Miami 21, the one the whole city was rezoned brand new. So that's in that process saw all the different problems, and sometimes it's really hard to understand, especially for the general public, what those new regulations actually mean for them in particular. So that was the basis of Zonar, is really how to we can make that process more transparent and more easily digestible. And very quickly, not only there's only Zonar regulations, but sometimes there's overlays of specific historic conservation districts or architectural guidelines that might completely just give maybe some parameters in some cases. In other cases, can actually completely shift the general massing of a building. So that can be that has to be incorporated to the system. And SONAR has the ability to handle all that. So Miami, as you know, is a little higher density, but so I'll check it out. And so feel free to ask me any questions. But SONAR can do high density as the same as low density. So, for example, this is how the application works. We do connect with the property records system that could be provided either by the city or by the county. That includes, of course, addresses, property, tax records, everything like that. And that's basically what Zona is right now. Whenever I'm clicking a property, it's asking what is all the information that is coming in there. And so let's create this little project in here of two properties. That's also an ability of Zoner. It's not limited to doing each individual folio. It can also handle assemblages. So if you have somebody coming in and asking that they can merge via unit or title a couple of properties to make a slightly bigger building, you can visualize that within the application, because of course the regulations might be different. It could be maybe minimum frontage dimensions or maximum building heights, etc. The other ability that we do have that is quite interesting is we have a system called proximity, and this one is because we can calibrate the specific rules or regulations based on the location. A very clear, a typical example is a zone might allow a liquor store, for example, but only if not within 1,000 feet of a school, for example. So Zona has the ability to do that, is figure out how close you are to any element out there and remove or add uses based on that. So this is actually, let me turn off the context, the 3D images. So this is basically what it's doing. It's giving you a massing representation of everything that is allowed. That includes setback, lot coverages, height regulations. If there's additional setbacks that happen in any other level, that will be shown like that. And it will also be highlighted as a site plan. So you will have the dimension of that frontage, the setback that needs to be provided, the frontage type that has been assigned, et cetera. So it's really easy to digest in some cases, because you can show it either like this or in an elevation, or in some of the cases also can be graphic. So it depends also on the type of user. We have all the different ways of displaying the information. Now, we do have something additional, which is what we call capacitor analysis. One of the typical components from zoning that really make or break a project is parking, typically. So, for example, if I add some amount of residential units that is allowed within this area, based on density and based on the area, Zona is also going to take into consideration parking. So let me just flip this around. The gray component in here is actually figuring out exactly how many parking spaces. In this particular example, it needs 119 parking spaces to satisfy the 74 residential units. In some locations, it also depends on the size of the parcel, of the residential unit, I'm sorry. So, for example, Miami is not the case, but let's say that they decided that the apartment units will be much bigger. That might actually change the parking requirements, and the building will grow or reduce from that point on. So that's really kind of like a very quick background of what the application can do very quickly. Now, from the planning point of view, and this is where it can get really interesting, is Sonar can also do multiple parcels simultaneously. So I overheard there sometimes when there's a rezoning request, either from an applicant or from the city, you can help visualize. So, for example, let's say that this corner parcel, they've requested a rezoning. So, of course, within the Miami context, let's see what happens if they rezone to a T5 open. And within basically a couple of seconds, you can visualize what the impact of that change will actually look within the neighborhood. Now, I turn off in the first example the context. If there is an availability of existing footprints and height, you can also incorporate that among what really exists in there. So, as you can see, basically, this example This is a rezoning that will actually create quite an impact on this corner. It's a lot higher than anything that is around it. So maybe that's not the best interpretation. So now that's one example that could be done. Here's another one where this could be a more of a single family. And then what happens if something like that gets rezoned, you can also get the idea. There's also the ability that, for example, whenever you have higher density zones that are touching single family, you can create custom setbacks for those. So in the first example, that was not the case. So again, very particular to Miami, whenever this zone meets that zone, there's no change. But in other zones like this one, when it is a much higher density, 8 stories meets a 2 story, setback has to be step up like this. Sonar does that automatically. And again, it has the ability to show this type of information in a site plan, and it will even give you the dimensions specifically for those setbacks on how it has to be divided. Now, I'm moving really fast, so feel free to stop me once again. So just want to be really respectful of your time. So one other ability of the application is actually visualizing changes to the code. So again, this is a very high density, but for the purpose of the example, let's say that you're doing commission and you want to show them what the change of this potential code could be. So this is what's right now, and you can say, okay, what happens if this, if the experience open, what happens if the base is, we reduce it to maybe 3 stories because that's, you know, more contextual what we want to do, and actually we need to, for the main street to be 20 feet, and actually both of primary and secondary streets to be 20 feet setback. And the tower, we don't need it to be that big. As a matter of fact, we only want it to be only 10 stories. So let's save that, come back to zone allowances, just give zoner a second to recalculate, and it's going to show you what that change looks like. In this particular case, you can see, oh, well, the setbacks of the towers now match the base. Not so bad, but then, you know, it might give us a lot, too much shadow into the street. So you can start making decisions, okay, maybe we should actually increase the setbacks of the towers to, let's say, 40 feet. Just making up numbers in here. But, and again, sonar in that respect is really not, is not biased. It's really just going to tell you exactly what those numbers are going to show them. As a planner, as an architect, I build it precisely for those cases, because sometimes in codes that we've developed, whenever we showed examples of what could be done, we use, of course, our experience as architects and planners, and we make it work. But that's not the reality or precisely what the code says. So zoner was really built for that. It was for it to tell me the beautiful and the ugly of those regulations. And one last item, and I think this is where zoner can get really powerful, is our zone review system. Same process of the beginning. You select a parcel by address, by folio, or by selecting on the map. But now imagine that you have an actual set of drawings that has been submitted to you for approvals. This system instead actually just lists all the required values, that being minimum lot areas, maximums, setbacks, etc. And at this point, the user, call it the zoning inspector or reviewer, will just start input those values into the system, and Zoner is really just checking this compliant, this not this compliant. When something is not compliant, it would of course let him know that there's an error in here, and there's the ability to add a message saying, you know, this is not compliant. And here's where we can maybe even add this more functionality, because in section 3.3, this particular section saying that this frontage has to be a certain dimension. So we're also connecting, and this is one of the services that we can provide, also digitizing the actual text of the code. So it becomes searchable and or taggable in this manner. So for example, that is this system that really is a digitized version of the code that can be searchable. It could also be plugged into any website in by sections, etc., and also can be edited. So if there's changes or amendments to the code, you don't really have to go back to Word or InDesign or any of those things, create a PDF and then upload it. This particular case will just change directly in here, and it will be updated, creating a new version. So that's anyway. I guess, well, of course, and finalize this thing, on the section of the review, of course, we have a report generator that we report actually looks like this. So it gives just a cover letter system that we have that you can create any letter of response pre-created as well. And the list of the information about the project, the overlays, the architectural conditions, I mean, specifically this one happened to be in the MIMO Historic District. Then it will actually start listing all the different requirements, required value, providers, and the comments. If there's a comment, as the one I showed before, it's annotated like this and then listed in four. So it's the report right now takes about 45 seconds to a minute to be generated. So it's really, especially in Miami, has really shown that it's improved efficiency quite a lot.
All right, Max, just in the interest of time, of their time, we have 30 minutes for this call. I know you guys have a meeting, Mark. If you guys have some questions for us, we're more than happy to answer them for you.
I'll open to the committee.
Hi, good morning. I've forgotten who I'm talking to there. My name is Scott Ewell. Two couple questions. On the view, do I see that there's a street view as well, option there? I guess I think we're in the 3D view right now or something. I would like to see a street view.
Basically go down to the street level?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, absolutely. And we can also do this as elevation. So, so for example, this is the elevation of a single building, but we can also showcase the whole street or block elevations in a couple of ways as well.
Okay. Is your product a licensing agreement or is it a purchase?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yeah, is your product a licensing agreement software or is it a purchase of software?
So what we would initially have to do is we would have to do an implementation of your zoning code. So essentially, you know, it's just digitizing your code, bringing in the property records, the GIS files. And then beyond that, it would just be a per person user license fee on a monthly basis.
Okay.
Depending on how many users you have, that's how we would charge.
Okay. I looked online and I noticed there are a lot of companies named Zonar, same spelling. how long has your company been in existence?
So we've been we went to market with Zonar in the summer and last summer. The following cities are already using Zonar. The city of Miami, they've been using it now for over 6 months. We've actually been working with them for about a year, but they really helped us develop the development and review piece of it that Max showed you guys towards the end. That's really a big pain point for them. So we had developed the zoning and planning piece of it, but they said, okay, you guys have all the math. We need this functionality built out. So we built them knowing that other cities had this pain point as well. But with that, we've also have finalized or are in the process of finalizing partnership agreements with the city of Fort Lauderdale, Cupertino, California, city of Lafayette, Louisiana, and the city of Delray Beach here in Florida. And we were also talking to the city of New York about doing a pilot. So we're relatively young, but we've had an extreme amount of success in this short amount of period. You know, I think we're hitting something that really cities have a pain point with. We're excited and, you know, things are really moving fast for us in terms of, you know, that's relative to how cities move. We do have six cities under contract right now.
Okay. This may be a question maybe for Mark, but, I mean, like any application, you know, the input is critical, and I don't know I wasn't too clear where you gather the data. You had mentioned something about from your counties or your cities, and do we have the
So they did mention that they typically collect data, you know, from counties, for example. We have a GIS department, and we have not sat down with Zonar to talk all the details to kind of assess what we have and don't have. But, you know, our GIS staff would work very closely with them. Obviously, everything's sort of dumped in a GIS-type platform-ish. You know, we would take as there, you know, there's some kind of combination, I'm sure, of, and Max will correct me if I'm wrong, but combination of what data do we have that's in GIS format that will, you know, tell them geographically about the city of Rockland, and then how do we have to mirror that with our zoning code. So when they're showing you all the setbacks, they do that for every zoning district, setbacks, height regulations, parking requirements, etc. So there's a process of putting all that information together. They have explained to me that, or maybe it's been talking with Felipe a little bit, their experience in doing this is, you know, depending on how much information we have already easily available, it's probably, my guess is, about a 3-month process. Once they have all the information from us that they need, they turn it around in about 4 to 6 weeks before it's ready to go live.
Because I know some of the cities that they're working with now are probably a little more sophisticated, New York maybe being possibly one of them, but you know, our GIS system's relatively new, and that's would be my, you know, I'd need to know a little more about, do we really have the capabilities to provide enough information?
Yeah, the GIS files really are relatively simple, and most cities have them available. We have yet to find a city that does not have what we need. Essentially, all we need is the GIS shape files of the parcels and the GIS shape files of the zoning layers. With those GIS files and a copy of your zoning code, we have the property records already, but if you guys have a set of property records that you'd prefer to use, we can use that as well.
And so, you know, if there was desire in going forward, one of the things I would want to do, Felipe, is probably get you guys and, you know, our GIS people in touch with you and have them sort of provide to you that which we have, so you could take a quick look at those things and say, you know, yeah, this is, you know, you're 90% or 100% of the way there, or you're 20% of the way there, so we'd have a better sense of, you know, what kind of time investment we would have to have on our end to get it ready for you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just on our end, if given that we have all the GIS files that we need, if we were to sign a contract, let's say tomorrow, we really need no more than, you know, 6 weeks to get you guys going. And we can generally probably deliver a little bit quicker than that, but we don't like to overpromise.
So I like the, you know, the 3D imagery. Can your system take into account topography as well? Because we're not a flat city. We've got topographic relief. That tends to be where we start to see some challenges when we put, you know, multi-story next to single story, and trying to come up with, you know, to visualize what that may look like in the future can be difficult given the topography. Obviously, things will get graded, but you can't grade a site with significant relief across it flat. So that's one of the complicating factors we have.
Absolutely. So yes, actually, coincidentally, all the cities that we have contracted, they're mostly flat. But yes, the system has the ability to understand topography. And besides, we can create regulations based on anything like that. Like, for example, you can say your typical setback is 10 feet unless your slope is bigger than 20%. In that case, your setback is 20 feet. So the system has the ability to create all that. We have even the ability to create how much the building can penetrate that topography in some cases. So basically we can handle that.
So the modeling that is provided, that is based specifically off of the code then when you look at the examples you gave us, that's not off of a specific plan that's been submitted. It's generally just off of the code, but Jay can do both?
Right, right, exactly. So, yeah, so all of these models are is basically taking all of the setbacks and showing you the gray component is actually just a master representation. So it's saying this one happens to be 60% lot coverage. Now, of course, during actual architecture, this could be an L with a courtyard. But the fact is that the maximum footprint cannot be any bigger than 9,000, and that the setbacks are, those are the setbacks. So, yes, it's really making an interpretation of that mapping within the box limitation.
So if I understand correctly, for example, let's say staff was going to be presenting to the Planning Commission or City Council a proposed zoning change absent a project. We could show the model in its current form. Here's what the existing code allows for under the current zoning, whatever that would be. And then we could show them the new model that would show what it would look like, the buildable envelope, for example, based on the new zoning changes. And then they could compare the two together to see if, you know, they get a sense that the new code is kind of achieving what they're looking for, or maybe we need to scale or tweak something else in that. Is that correct, Max?
Yes. So, for example, we don't have right now the functionality to upload an actual custom, but we already thought about it, and we're thinking that it can look something like this. So this is a 3D platform where we can upload custom projects, but that this could be the limitations of the code, of the regulations, for example. But let me change that to a more transparent look. And then you can say, and this is what the proposal is saying. So, yeah, this is all good. It's, you know, within your limits. Fine. We can have another example where, you know, maybe this tower is projecting 20 feet higher, and then you can say, well, nope, that doesn't meet our height regulation. But that's the goal. That one we're hoping to have, within this year as a functionality.
So changes within your codes, if you're proposing a change, you could actually do an overlay to understand better what those changes represent.
Yes. So, again, in its current form, the product or software, as I understand it, Max, we would show, if we wanted to show the implications of proposed zoning change, we would be able to show them the 3D model of what the code currently allows the building envelope to be, and then we would show them a separate model of what the building envelope would be under the new zoning change. And then what you just showed us was future functionality you're considering, where you show in very light wireframe form what the code allows, and then you underlay that with a specific proposed project, and then they can compare both. That's something you foresee coming in the future, the specific project modeling.
That is correct. So, yes, you explained it perfectly. So, yes, currently today you can show it like this, and they make another tab, as I see I have multiple tabs, and create the same one but with a change in zoning, and you can talk it over there just to kind of compare apples to apples at that point.
Okay.
And so, again, staff thought about bringing this forward. I mean, obviously, this is a tool that appears to be very powerful, especially in very large urban environments, City of Miami, City of New York. We did talk, Felipe, you and I, about how Rockland is much more of a suburban community. But nonetheless, I think the principles are the same. The boxes would just be smaller. And obviously, this is a tool that shows building envelopes. So, you know, most projects that would come forward would not max out the building envelope. They would be something less than that, but it would be a tool that, you know, we could in real time, right at the meeting if we wanted, play with the different information in the tables and try to work towards getting a, you know, the City Council or Planning Commission level of comfort of what the impacts of their decision making would be on the built environment. So that's why we wanted to bring it forward and see if that's something, you know, because it's hard. It's really hard for anyone, even trained professionals, as you're looking at, especially a larger area, and you're thinking, you know, maybe we think we want higher density or greater height than this side, but now we want to make sure we have a transition coming down. And it's not always clear on if what you're proposing to do in the code really mirrors what you're thinking in your head of what it would look like. So that's why we wanted to bring it forward. And as they showed, Max showed those reports that you can issue, the review. That would be the other benefit for staff. I don't think that's the primary benefit. I think the primary reason we brought is for what we just described. But the review, what's nice about that is we could be right, as you probably have seen in our office, people come in all day long, and staff works with them right at the counter. We have the TV screens, and people ask all the time, what can I do with my property? You know, how high can I go? Staff could use this tool to just show them, well, you know, in relationship to everybody else, here's what the boxes look like, and this is what you can and can't do. So that would be a use. And then, obviously, as Max showed,
Mark, absolutely. And then, you know, just to let you know that they're just using it for that use case. That's the initial use case they have. Is, you know, very similar to Rockland, very residential community, and they have a bunch of teardowns of single family homes. I want to know what I can put on this property. So it's just like, type in your address. Here you go. This is the maximum you can build here. Right now, they're really literally doing it with a pen and paper.
Mm-hmm. And actually, sorry to interrupt there. We also have that whenever you, for the example that Felipe mentioned, you can create an address. And this is the report that comes out on the other end, the one on the side on the screen. It will actually automatically create an aerial image, a zoning map, a general location. It will list all of the uses that are allowed or not allowed or with conditions. General information about setback requirements, maximum height, et cetera, a couple of versions, and a couple more charts. So this is actually what Cupertino is requesting for their front desk service.
Any other questions? Okay, gentlemen, we really appreciate your time. You know, we're going to have some additional discussion, and then staff will get back to you in the near future. Our city manager has not had the benefit of viewing your presentation with you on the phone. He has looked up online what you've offered and has had staff's thoughts. And so he asked that we bring it to the committee. And what we may want to do, if there is support in moving forward, is perhaps invite you to do a similar presentation in the future, maybe to the Planning Commission or City Council. But thanks so much for your time today.
Perfect, Mark. It seems like there may be a fit on a couple of things. So, you know, more than happy to schedule another webinar for you guys.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for your time. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I think we're all good. Okay. Any thoughts, comments?
I know Scott had asked the question about, you know, how it's set up. Is it a purchase of software? It sounds like it's more of a monthly type fee structure based on licensing per user. So what you'd have an upfront cost for them to pull everything in, create the city in their system. So what kind of cost have they shared with you?
Without looking at our data, you know, we haven't sent it to them yet. They said their typical upfront cost is about $20,000 to $30,000 to set everything up, to put everything, you know, get the model that you just saw and everything in tabular form so that our code's electronic format. And then their user cost is about $1,000 a month for the first user and about $250 a month for every user thereafter. And our thought, I haven't drilled down far enough with them yet on this, but our thought is, you know, perhaps we just have one user. And what we would do is whether that user was at the counter with a citizen using it or at their desk doing plan review or here at a meeting running it for the decision makers, that would still just be one user, would be my thought. So that's kind of the numbers they've talked about. They did seem to indicate there's some flexibility. We just haven't drilled down on that.
Okay.
Are there any, you know, competing companies? I got to think.
You know, I'm not sure, Scott. I haven't done a lot of research. I can tell you that as a staff member, we get bombarded by products all the time. I'm sure you do too, from companies out there. I don't recall seeing a product quite like this in my years of doing this. That doesn't mean that there's not, and I think staff would probably do that research so that you would know before we came back to you. But I think this is fairly new, and I'm sort of familiar. I don't know Max personally, and I don't know any of these gentlemen personally, but I'm a little familiar. Max In the Miami area, the Regional Planning Council there, their forte and focus is urban development. And there's an urban design firm called Plater Zyberg, which is well known in the world for traditional design type of efforts. And they're very connected with the Regional Planning Council in the communities all along that coastline. And so there's a design studio. And a lot of, you've seen a lot of product coming out, and Max didn't share that with you, but he's kind of a product of that process. So they sort of are sort of the leading edge, front edge on developing tools to assist communities with visualizing development. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is the only one quite like it, but we'll do that research.
Yeah, I mean, it would seem with Silicon Valley in our backyard, it would seem that it would be, you know, something worthy of looking at.
Yeah.
And I would just say, as obviously council is being the body that has to approve budgets, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road, is determining what this thing costs and, you know, weighing its value. But it certainly helped. It's very helpful to be able to visualize that. I don't have to ask you to stand in the back of the room and tell me how tall 10 feet is anymore.
Trying to measure from here to there. What is that? 20 feet, 30 feet?
Yeah, it looks pretty neat. I mean, it looks, you know, could be very helpful, but, you know, weighing the costs, obviously.
I think you guys do, because you see this all day long. I don't know about the general public. One of the concerns I have about the general public is it's clearly just showing buildable envelope, and most projects that are coming in are not going to that extent. And my only fear is, would the public look at that and think, oh my God, you know, they're going to, and we have to put some energy in explaining, no, this is what they could do. This is what is being proposed. It's less than the envelope. So.
Well, but I think that's beneficial. And for me, bringing something to council or even to the planning commission, I think the benefit would be having them take data. It's what they do on an actual project, something we've had where we've had a rezone. I mean, I don't know that I'd go the extent of something that's coming forward. I would look at something we've done just to avoid any type of challenges on something that comes forward that changes. But to give a real-life example, and I think when we talk about elevations and different things, you know, we've had some projects where that has been a concern as well as the coverage. So having that, I think, would help understand how it could be utilized in any other tool and or method in which staff would use it, I think would be helpful as well.
So. Yeah, I think it works probably really well for scope and scale and building envelope and how things fit, you know, kind of maybe the fourth dimension being, okay, what's the use if, you know, we're outside the residential side and it's, okay, you know, is it a liquor store? Is it, you know, something else? We miss that element in this, but you know, so it has its limits, but yeah. It does help with kind of the size and what is this thing potentially, what's the total scope of it, not in particular to use, but it's interesting.
And I think with infill and with the RENA discussions, clearly there's an application because of some rezoning potential and all that. So certainly something to take a look at, but I would want to see, if we could, a real-life application. Looking at buildings in Miami, I've been to Miami, Rockland and Miami, there's a little bit of a difference there in looking at a 22-story building.
There's a little difference. I would also add, too, that it's helpful as we're building, and Greg, you mentioned the topography, imagery, and, you know, we have views of the Sierras and, you know, being able to kind of see the landscape, you know, I think is, for me, when I'm thinking about buildings, I'm thinking sometimes about how that might obstruct or change the view. You know, we have some projects that have dramatically changed the view. And so I think that view or view shed piece would be, failed to ask that question, but that would be helpful for our, you know, for us here in Rockland, I think, because it's significant.
A great example of that was the Los Cerros project when it first came forward and the 3D modeling that they did that helped with that. So, Scott, that's a great point.
Yeah.
We can follow up with them on that. I wanted to just ask staff if you had any thoughts or questions or concerns about it before I asked the committee if they want us to advance.
I think our biggest concern would be the effort to get all the different zoning we have. A lot more zoning districts than perhaps some cities, so that would be the biggest part of the task to make this work, would be pulling all that information out, but it's certainly doable.
Yeah, actually, to that point, one of the things that I noticed that's different in Rockland than I'm used to seeing in other jurisdictions is sometimes in jurisdictions, the zoning requirements are more transparent, they're more self-evident, and they more defer to like the citywide zoning, whereas in Rockland, there's many more specific plans. And so you could be looking as a member of the public at your property and the citywide zoning and think, oh, I could do this, and not realize, oh, no, you got to drill down to the specific plan. And right now, from a staff perspective, staff does have to spend some time going back and forth and looking and kind of doing research. And one of the things I also like about it, that it doesn't help the committee, but we could, it would take some time, but it would be a nice effort if we got all of that stuff out of the specific plans and the citywide zoning and all these little unique, you know, plan developments and get it digitized in one place so that there's one reference tool for staff to go to. Now, maintaining it going forward, yeah, staff, every time we changed something in a specific plan or something, you'd have to go back and adjust, but it would be more centralized. That's another benefit that I see. So, real quick, just committee perspective, do you think this is something you'd like us to get more research on and put together and bring to the, maybe, I don't know if it's Planning Commission or right to City Council? What do you think?
I think everybody's, it's a favorable, you know, a good idea, but I still, you know, the cost, I want to be brought forward more on the merits of the cost. Okay. and really thoroughly vet any other, you know, competitors or other mm-hmm. products out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, 32,000 to start potentially. Mm-hmm. And so you have the first year, the startup cost, and then the monthly fee. You know, 32,000 is a lot.
And 32 is just the check and the staff time.
Yeah, but then train everyone, and then what is the benefit that's being provided? Now staff comes to us and tells us this is the best thing since sliced bread, and we're going to be able to bring something back. As you know, you've got individuals on the council, at least one who's really visual. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, bring something that I can get a good grasp of. If that's there, I'd certainly want to hear what the Planning Commission thinks. Okay. Certainly move forward. Scott makes a great point about also looking what options are out there.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those commissioners with angst, having been on the commission long enough to see projects get rezoned and then, oh, crap, what did we do? You know, this isn't what we envisioned. It's too dense, too high, too something. You know, as a legislative action, we can obviously do something about that if we think far enough in advance, but sometimes it's just what are we not thinking about at that stage, and this may be a tool to help us go, okay, maybe we should, you know, restrict height and density different ways. So yeah, I think it has some utility, notwithstanding costs you all get to deal with.
Great. Well, then staff will use that. We'll start collecting information on all those points that you've raised, and I'll talk to the city manager, and I would assume that perhaps the next step after we collect all that information might be the Planning Commission for a recommendation. But, you know, I hear basically generally favorable comments, but some questions and concerns. All right. Thanks so much. I think now what we'll do is move forward with item 5. It's the Villages at Civic Center Design Review. The Villages project was within the Quarry District, Architectural District. This is DR 2017-0013, and this is the first meeting to review the project. I'll turn it over to staff.
Thank you, Mr. Mondell. Dara Denworth, Rockland Planning. Villages at Civic Center, as you mentioned, is within the Quarry District. The project includes 54 attached single-family homes on small lots and 11 detached single-family homes on 10,000-square-foot lots. The project site is situated between Rucola Road and Lost Avenue and Winding Lane and Evelyn Avenue. The attached RD8 product is accessed or will be accessed by Rucola Road, which will become the project's private driveway. The RD8 project is indicated here in color in the browns and sort of neutral colors labeled with white. There's also a blue duplex on the lower right-hand side of the project site. So those townhomes or those detached units will be accessed from the Rucola Road driveway coming from Woodside to the southwest. 8 of the detached homes will front on Lost Street, and 3 will front on Evelyn, which those 3 also will be accessed from Woodside. You likely recall that the time extension for the tentative subdivision map and the Civic Center General Development Plan amendment came before council separately late last year. So this is now the design review component of that project. These are some graphics of the attached single family or the RD8 product. The applicant has used several of the required or listed architectural elements for the quarry district, including exposed wood framing, stone masonry, gable roofs, operable windows with divided lights, the use of panels, shed roofs, and novelty siding. I'll just have a few more words and then I'll scroll through the images and stop me if I go too fast or you want to look at something or have a question. The applicant has worked with staff to revise the five-pack that backs up to the quarry and the public trail in response to staff's comments, incorporating additional architectural features to better comply with the quarry district guidelines where we believe the second story could be visible. They are using varying color and material palettes with variation between the four and five packs, employing the mirror or reverse packs across the internal streets and varying the colors of the central units within the pack to achieve greater variation. These are the five packs. The lower elevation is the enhanced rear elevation. This is showing the unenhanced rear elevation. This is the duplex. And this is the color material board. The color material, yes. Mr. Yule has that. I've printed copies of the material list in case you'd like to reference that separately. So they are using a mix of natural materials and fairly neutral colors. Moving to the detached single family or the RD8 product, of the required quarry district architectural features, they are employing incorporating six. Sometimes they're in combination. All six may not be on one particular model, but overall they're employing at least six of the required elements, including exposed wood framing, stone masonry, gable roofs, operable windows with divided lights, the use of paneling, and novelty siding. Again, they're varying the color and material palettes with no two houses of the same palette on adjacent lots, so the street frontage will have variation. And the applicant has worked with staff to revise these homes in response to our comments, incorporating additional architectural features to better comply. So the first version we saw did not have as many enhancements as these have. So there are two floor plans, each with two variations of architectural features, and then within those, the different color and material palettes can be varied. And again, the physical color and material boards are there, and the materials list is printed as a hard copy for your reference as well. With that, I'll offer to answer any questions you may have at this time.
Questions?
Well, not pertaining to the architecture, but this is maybe a comment and a question. I hope the applicants or representative of the applicant could come to these meetings, and I always thought that was sort of the intent of this architectural review, gives us a different forum to really drill down and so give the applicant a better sense of you know, where they need to go way ahead of the project, so they're not surprised when the project comes forward. And I know some of the applicants that have come to the few meetings we have, it's been beneficial to have some dialogue. So I don't know.
So a couple things on that. First of all, I think we've talked about this a few times. We can certainly change it. But the intent as it was constructed was that at the first meeting, it's typically staff and the committee only. Although these are public meetings, the applicants and the public are welcome to all of them. And the thought behind that was that the committee could speak perhaps, might be more comfortable to raise its questions or concerns with staff and not necessarily have to do that with the applicant. And then after those discussions were held, if there were revisions required, et cetera, questions, then staff would get back with the applicant at the second meeting. That's when the applicant would be here. However, in almost each case we've done this, in the first meeting, the applicant has been here, including today. So they are certainly welcome to speak, and the committee is certainly welcome to ask questions.
I was not aware, sir, that you're the applicant.
I'm just here to listen.
No, great, great, great. Well, I'm glad you're here then. Good, good, good. I guess my question, and there was reference in the staff memo that there's been a lot of conversations, and you've been very cooperative with the neighborhood, and thank you for that. And I assume the neighborhood has had a lot of looks at these architectural pieces too. Have they or have they not yet?
I don't think staff has sent these to the neighborhood. That would not be part of our normal process.
So,
if you could come to the mic.
Is it on?
It's on. There you go. The neighbors have had many looks at the architecture that preceded the round that we submitted 4 or 5 days ago. So we made some changes to the rear elevation of the townhome product. In addition, we made changes to the front and side elevations of the RD4 product, and those were submitted, again, 4 or 5 days ago. We sent those to the neighbors yesterday or the day before, and have told them that we expect to receive, that we've received some feedback from staff, and that we expect to receive additional feedback as a result of this meeting, and we are tentatively scheduled to meet with them Monday at 5:30 to review whatever feedback we get.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry again for not acknowledging. We haven't met, so I didn't know you were the mysterious guy in the audience there. So
No worries.
All right. I don't have any other questions at this point. I'm kind of curious to hear some questions from our planning commissioner and our former planning commissioner.
Real quick, I'm sorry, before we do it, just also recall that this, whatever this recommendation will be, will also go to the planning commission for public input at that time.
Can I also add that the neighbors are very supportive?
Yes, we've had... At a council level, we've had a number of conversations, but you know, again, we're just focusing on the architecture here today.
My turn. Okay, I really like the two story. I think that that product I preferred to one story actually has good relief and lots of architectural elements. There's one window on the second story that almost has the size and scale of a door. I see it's got some architectural features around it, but it's almost the same size, kind of.
Could we bring that image up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's the one that has the blue below it. Is that right?
There's various versions of
it. If we bring the color.
Slide 10.
Is it the one on the bottom? Right above the garage door?
It's on both, but you can top or bottom. Got it. It's that white. Yeah. I don't know if that can be kind of.
At the second story?
Right above the garage door.
To the left? That one right there. Yeah. It's just one of those things. I'm like, yeah, is that a door? Is that a window? Yeah. Just personal. And then on the color, am I holding the right color and materials board here? This proposes a kind of comp roof, if you will. Okay. I don't know if that's a structural issue, but that's a lot of space, comp roof. Be nice to enhance that with similar to the other roof materials that I see in the handouts if possible.
Which structure? So is this every?
Just the two-story, or is it every?
Or just the two-story? The single and
The attached would have that. So the townhomes plus the one duplex.
Versus that.
And this is the, okay.
I would just point out that's architectural comp shingles, so it's not going to be a sheet comp roof. They will be architectural shingles with a 3D look to them that have the look of tile. And the reason we do that is because the townhomes will be governed by an HOA, and that obviously has enhanced construction defect risk. And I will tell you that every house we built in the last 15 years that had architectural comp shingles survived last year without a leak. And, you know, even my own house that has concrete tile roofs, a roof suffered some leakage during the extremely wet weather. So for that product, we prefer a more durable, better roofing product. But it architecturally will have the look of, not the look, it really, it will be shingles. They're just comp shingles, composition shingles instead of concrete tile shingles.
Sorry. Do we have anything like that currently in Rockland? I'm a real visual person, and looking at something flat on this doesn't really give me much to look at. I mean, it looks like an asphalt shingle flat, and I know you're saying that that's not what it's going to be, but certainly, it would be helpful for me to have a better understanding of what it's going to look like.
I believe every home on Lost Avenue, other than one, has that type of roof.
That is not architectural.
But excuse me. But that, I mean, those homes. When you say on the existing homes,
yes.
So you said, so, yeah, and some of that's some of the old style, very flat comp. You know, so when you have a lot of roofs, it looks like a lot of flat roofs. You know what I mean? Yeah, I agree with Ken. I mean it. If there's, you know, more articulation, if that's the proper term, to that, you know, that gives a little, breaks up the flat aspect of it, I would like to see that. I mean,
we have used architectural dimensional composition shingles in town. I can't at this moment pull a particular project out of my head, but we can look into that and let you know.
Yeah, if you could, just again, as you know, I like to.
And we can get you some better images of that product so you can see it.
Either way, it's also nice to see it actually on a structure just to get a sense for what it's going to look like.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think staff shared similar comments going into it, and I think once you mentioned it was architectural, staff understood that to be dimensional, but I agree. We still have similar questions. We would like to see maybe even here's an example of a house that has it, a picture of that, and here's the shingle itself, not just the piece, but actual maybe a shingle or something, so we could get a sense of it. Because unfortunately, I think the way these are rendered, it feels like it's more like a three-tab flat, non-dimensional shingle.
I agree with that. Do you have the pictures of the neighborhood homes? We might be able to show you that now, yeah, okay. Although I'm not sure how close
it is. While she's pulling that up, too, you'd mentioned, so did you say that you had problems with leakage of certain types of roof?
Concrete tile roofs, yeah, just don't hold up as well as the
comp. I'm in the property and casualty insurance business, so I totally understand.
The comp roofs will go 40 years. I mean, they just will.
They will.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think from our perspective, it's more of what does it look like over 40 years as opposed to, I love the fact that they last 40 years. And I will tell you, I have a concrete roof as well. And I suffered the same experience. So I completely understand. So when you say it's more durable, it lasts, it handles the weather, I like that. It's just a matter of what will it look like.
And there's so many versions. I mean, so many variations now, correct? I mean, the market has provided, you know.
Absolutely. And depending on the neighborhood and the location, you know, we built seven homes in Sutter Creek a couple years ago. And in that area, I don't know if it's weather-driven or whatever, but people just don't use the concrete tile roofs. They use the architectural comp. And you know, from my perspective, it's a good-looking product. It has a bit of an image problem, but visually it has the 3D look that you're looking for. We just need to get that in front of you so that you can see it, I think.
Well, I think what you're hearing is that we certainly don't – I don't want something that appears flat and, you know,
that's right.
Something from the 70s. That
Nor do we.
Yeah.
Nor do we. Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else?
You also had a question about the one window versus door.
Yeah. Just the look. Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to tell from a rendering, but, you know, if you're walking down the street, would you look up there and go, well, is that a door? Is that a window? Is it a door to nowhere?
It's Winchester House.
Yeah. That just may be a size and scale issue, but it's just kind of the same size as a door. So
that's a 5030 window with a novelty siding panel below it. And then next to that, if you're looking in the blue area, those are French doors that lead to a small balcony in the five-pack. Okay.
Do you want to see a change?
So long as it has elements there to kind of, hey, this is a window. If it was more plain, and it depends upon which one, the color variation, but when it's kind of in the maybe taupe color, more green color, at least in my rendering, it looks okay.
The lack of a balcony may also show people there's no...
Yeah, you don't want to walk out.
You're right.
Yeah. But is that different material than the siding adjacent to it? Or is it just a paint color difference around the window Greg is referencing?
So the what I'd call the novelty siding below the window is actually panel siding. So it's a different material.
I see, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there a if I go to either side of that window where there's brown on the top elevation, is there a dimension? Is there a relief? Is that element stuck out further than the wall that's next to it with the other double window? Or is it flat and flush in the same plane?
That is a pop-out. The gable?
Yes.
Everything below the gable is a pop-out.
Okay. So what? Maybe a thought would be, instead of having just the panel below the window with the walls on each side of it and the top elevation painted brown, what if we just turned all of that to a paneled, you know, everything under the window, above the window, and around the window, just panelize that entire pop-out so it doesn't isolate it as such a long linear element that gives the illusion of almost like it being a door. Is that possible? Would that help, you think?
This, from an angle, I think that looks better.
Yeah. Are you okay leaving it this way, or do you want to see some materiality change or color change? Or
look at it from an angle, it's...
So right now you have the panel siding below the window, and
right.
then you have
above.
The board and bat
yes.
in the gable
right.
end above it.
Right.
So it mixes. It just provides variation.
Variation, yeah.
But we can, if you guys want to make it all one texture.
Yeah.
I'd rather see the contrast in color and texture, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Based upon this image, I'm better.
Okay. If the committee's okay with that then, based on the image that Greg's looking at, which is the more 3D elevation from the side where he sees the relief of that element and feels like it'll stand out more that way.
And for what it's worth, it also ties to the ground floor that has the similar siding detail below the ground floor windows.
Yeah, I can see that.
The large window there. I'm fine either
okay.
way.
Okay. I agree, too. I mean, if Greg's satisfied with... new version or new image. I have a question on the driveways. I'm not sure even how to ask the question, but really, I suppose. But
you want to pull up the site plan, Darren?
Is that perhaps? Like a material? Is that color depicting? You know, is that like not concrete? It's not a lighter concrete, or is it intentionally darker, or is it just
it was
a
just
placeholder?
There to break up. It was they had it all grass, and I said that's just not accurate. So something to show to represent driveways.
Yeah,
and so that's not intended to depict what's going to be there. It'll just be regular
concrete.
The driveways are 18 feet deep. You know, we haven't talked about whether we're going to add some. We typically break them up a little bit.
That's kind of where I was going with that.
Okay.
Because those were very stark
And they're also very long, and they're not really that long in reality. They're 18 feet. But we typically add some detail on the driveways.
And the detail would, you mean like curbing or something on the, or?
They're literally lines that are cut into the driveway.
Yeah, the lines, but they're not any kind of flower bed curbing or anything to break up just the long straight. I'm just visualizing, looking down the street and seeing a lot of rows of very flat driveways, you know, as opposed to breaking it up, you know.
Well, they're not all, if you look at the site plan as well as the elevations, or the renderings, they're not all, it's not a solid surface of driveway. So I guess the way I would envision it, and you correct me if I'm wrong, please, is the driveways are like any other standard driveway we would typically see in Rockland, concrete, 18 feet long or so. And then because of the position of the garage door relative to other garage doors in the elevation, there is, in many cases, if most, if not all, some degree of separation between driveways. It's not a continuous driveway surface between all the units, and that separation would be landscaping.
Landscaping. Okay. And, in fact, all of the driveways except one unit would be a single-car driveway, so they'll be narrower, than most driveways. So we have one that has a two-car side-by-side garage. The other units mostly have a two-car tandem, or in one case, a one-car garage. So they'd be about 10 feet wide rather than a standard 16 or 17-foot wide driveway.
Okay, okay.
In fact, they'd probably be more like 9 feet.
But there's no, we're not doing any planting of trees or anything in these front yards.
Do we have a landscape plan yet?
Landscape.
I have it. I didn't bring it.
Okay. Do you recall if there's what type of plantings are between the?
A lot of plantings. I don't have it with me, but yeah, we have
You're going to see semi-typical front yard plantings for a small lot product in these little front yard areas. So there will be trees in most, if not all, but.
Okay. Yeah, but you understand the reason of the question. I mean, the rendering doesn't necessarily depict that. So to clarify, there will be landscaping.
Correct.
I don't know what typical particularly means, but maybe the planning commissioner has a better perspective of that.
Well, I do think, correct me if I'm wrong, Dara, the landscaping plan will come to the planning commission. Is that correct as part of the review?
It will, and the first version has been reviewed, and it's generally consistent with the design review guidelines for small lot, single family, residential.
And when you say design review guidelines, those are the citywide guidelines. The ARC, the architectural district, doesn't have separate landscaping because the review is typically related to the architecture. Yeah.
Okay. That's correct.
If I can add, we also have, additional landscaping in the spacing between the buildings. There's a lot of landscaping here.
Okay.
I wish we had the landscape plan where you could see it. And for what it's worth, the front yard landscaping for all of the units will be maintained by the HOA. So it'll be well maintained.
And this committee is rather new, and we really haven't had a conversation about.
And I'm not sure I'm supposed to be here.
We're going to get this right, though.
Okay.
I'm glad you did.
And
I'm glad now I know who you are. But the landscaping probably, just as for future, future conversations, landscaping certainly enhances the architecture. There's a balance there that, so when you look at these without any landscaping, it changes. I'm a visual person, too, and it kind of changes it, the feel of it. So for whatever that's worth.
We'll ask the applicants when they produce their architectural renderings to try to include landscaping in them as well so that we have a better, fuller picture of what the presentation will be.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're just two different architects and two different designers, and they don't,
Extent that's possible and reasonable.
Yeah.
And future staff can bring their landscape plan as well.
Yeah, sure.
Any other questions?
I have no question. More right. questions.
Can you pull up page 16, the duplex? There you go. So just at first glance, and I know that the windows, there was a lot of discussion about the windows and the larger windows due to the other architecture in the area. I think the first look for me when I was going through the packet, I just and I really struggle with what just looks bland. It just doesn't have a lot to it, and I understand you have the general framing along the window. Was there any consideration of doing more to kind of enhance the front of those? Because there's just not much. I mean, I like the addition of the essentially the brick or the rock on the right, and then you have the wood on the left. But anything to enhance the windows, or is that just you felt was more in line with using the larger windows and going with the other design in the area of what you already have?
So let me confess that the duplex is a bit of a stepchild in this project. There's only one of them, mm-hmm. and it's really to address the concern of the neighbor having a two-story home behind his home, you know, having lived there for 40 years. And so we agreed to put a duplex there, and we've spent a fair amount of energy. This is a long way to say I'm happy to add some detail. We've spent a fair amount of energy on the townhome product because that's really what the project, the RD8, is all about. We've tried to spend time on the single-family product because that's really sensitive to the neighbors. And, you know, Lou Dubevic is going to be looking at the back of this thing, not the front. And, right. you know, it's all the way at the end of the driveway, and it's a bit of a stepchild. So okay. the answer is let me work on that.
Okay.
I hear you.
Faux shutters or something to – because just the front of it, just it, when you look at it, it just doesn't really say much. It's just as you said, it's kind of the stepchild. It's just I'll be honest with you. The design is kind of just there.
I just can't argue with you. Okay. I mean, it's just yeah. I have a thing about shutters, but so I'll try to avoid shutters. But let me.
I mean, that's fine too. I mean,
you got to get something on there.
Something that enhances the.
We can put some faux beams coming out the top. The corbels we can do. We can do. Some more work on the outside.
Wonderful.
Yes.
You might want to consider, if you look at your elevation 2570B on the single family homes,
yep.
you have a similar condition on that gable end. And one of the things you did there was you, instead of having the window with the larger expanse, exactly, you made it look like and feel like it was more of a pop-up, right? So that may be one example of something that you could do that would just help. It would still be consistent with the other designs.
Yeah. We also struggled, I will tell you, with, you know, on the townhome product, I want to have you be my confessors here, but on the townhome product, we really spent a lot of energy trying to have each unit have its own identity in terms of, you know, finishes and structure and colors and that sort of thing. And the duplex is, they're basically mirror images of one another. And so do we have each one its own identity? Do we make them match like a typical duplex? You know what I mean? That sort of thing. And so at some point, I grew weary. So I will. Okay. I will look at it with some renewed energy, and we'll enhance that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's.
If I may also ask, on the garage doors, it looks like they're enhanced to give that to kind of that barn type look. Is that actually going to be part of the design of the doors, where they look like they've got the connections and rather
yes.
than just the plain, it's enhanced with those. So that is part of it. I
mean, yes.
It does appear here.
And on the townhome product as well.
Okay.
Yes.
Because that certainly
– dresses it up.
It does. Absolutely. Yeah. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can never tell. Sometimes you zoom in on these and you're like, it looks like it, but it could be a mark. So.
And part of it is, you know, what the draftsman draws, you know, what they have available digitally on any given day is not necessarily – what Wayne Dalton has available on their retail, you know, builder line garage. But anyway, yes, that's intended to be an accurate representation.
A coach light on these elevations would also help. I'm assuming you're going to have an outdoor light there, but it's yeah. absent in the image. So.
Oh, yeah, you know, you're right. I didn't even catch that. So
There will be. It just got missed.
Yeah.
So
okay.
we'll fix that as well.
Good.
I have a question on the single family homes. Could you, Dara, pull up the 3D renderings of those? My question is, first of all, I guess my comment would be thank you for spending time and energy working with staff on making modifications. I do think the product that you're presenting is a nice balance between trying to satisfy the quarry district guidelines and the homes that are there currently, so it doesn't feel like it's out of place. It's an enhancement, and it's also sensitive to the built environment. So I think you've done a nice job with that. My only question about these elevations is, and maybe it's just the way my eyes are reading them, but it seems like all of the designs are sort of a variation on only earth tones, whereas for the two-story attached product and even the duplex product, you have, you know, some blues introduced and some greens or you know, sage maybe is the color. I'm not sure. Is that correct? Are we incorporating any more color in these, or are these all tans?
I would agree that the brighter non-earth tones are in the townhome product. Our view is that that's more appropriate. It's a little bit more playful, a little bit more of a quasi-urban product, and that buyer is, you know, likes that. For the single family, we, as you said, we went a little overboard in trying to blend with the neighborhood on our first design. I describe it as, I don't want a yikes. I don't want somebody to drive down Lost Avenue and say, yikes, who, you know, who put that up? And so I think the color scheme in the single family was a combination of looking at the images in the Quarry District Architectural Guidelines to see what colors were out there, and also looking at the neighborhood and trying not to have something that stands out, frankly. And those are the colors that buyers, in our experience, like on the single-family detached.
To help you with that, if I may, can you pull up the pictures of the homes on Lost Avenue? Do you have that? Yeah, so I think this is what you're referring to, is kind of the what exists there today, and if you were to kind of move that color palette that you're using, it would be very different from what exists there, if I understand you correctly.
If we introduced the blues and the more vibrant colors that we're using on the townhome,
right,
is my view. And in terms of the architectural comp roof, by the way, the lower left-hand corner is one of the, I'm not sure newer is the right word, but you know, you can see the texture on the roof, and if you go down a little further, you might be able to find some more. Again, you'll see the variegation in color and texture on the lower left, 3951. If you go down further, there's probably more examples, but okay.
And so the roof that you're proposing is not only varying thicknesses, but also colors too.
Absolutely,
right? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, it's an Oak Ridge. It's a Owens Corning product, mm-hmm, called Oak Ridge, and you can find them images online. But we'll get those to you. Did I answer your question about the colors and?
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree fully. I understand your intent, and I agree with everything you've said to the extent that that's what the buyers would be looking for, and I'm sensitive to your sensitivity. I don't have a strong opinion about introducing some more colors there, but like, for example, I don't know, this is Winding Lane, not Lost Avenue, but you have some, you know, you have, and I'm not saying it's great, but you have an example that's got some reds or burnt umbers, and I do think when you look at the Quarry District Architectural Guidelines, there are a number of images that introduce some color, because it's not uncommon that in more traditional homes, especially homes older than these, that they did have a lot of color in them. But it's not a strong issue for me. I only raise it to see if there was, you know, any other similar concerns. But I'm okay with it as is, too.
Okay. And to the extent that we are able to pre-sell houses before they're painted, subject to the caveat that we want variation, we generally let buyers sort of pick their color scheme. And so we offer, on these 11 homes, there will be 10 color schemes. And between the differences in elevation and the difference in color, you should wind up with a lot of variation.
Can you remind me again, are the single family homes part of the HOA?
No,
they're not. Yeah, they're individual. Yeah, so over time, somebody inevitably paints a blue house in the neighborhood, you know. So
whatever the market wants, you will get on Lost Avenue and Evelyn. I I agree with that.
Well, you know, the nice thing about the architectural district, Brad is going to correct me if I'm wrong, but I do think for existing homes, and these will be existing at some point, somebody comes in and wants to change their color scheme, do we require them to get architecture approval? Do you remember? Not this committee's. I know it would be a staff level, but I'm trying to remember if we approve
at
that or not.
At most, it would be for you to approve, but I don't believe color changes on the single families have to come back to us at all.
Okay.
But I'd have to double check to be
sure. I know no one does. I mean, no one thinks about going.
Well, what I'm thinking about is the guy.
As a practical matter, you're absolutely correct. Most of the time, we would not come to our attention that they'd even repainted unless somebody complained.
Well, that's what I'm thinking about is in the case of somebody who paints the pink polka dot and everybody gets upset and council says, what can we do about this? We'll go back and look at the architecture guidelines to see if we have some abilities there.
We have a project that I own on the Castellos Golf Course, and one of the villages is literally off a cul-de-sac street, and across from that cul-de-sac street is a beige house with the brightest pink garage doors and
wow,
doors
nice.
You could ever imagine.
Ran into a paint salesman.
Having said that, we found out later that it was the pink was for breast cancer awareness because he had lost his wife. But anyway, it was when we first looked at the project, it was, oh my Lord, it was a serious yikes issue. But anyway.
So do we have a recommendation or other comments?
Well, I would like an opportunity on the roofing to understand, get a chance to take a look at that before we say, yeah, we're fine, let's move this forward. I mean, personally, I know we're going to I'm just not accustomed to just having a few people here, so normally I will be right at the mic. So I definitely want to understand better the roofing, okay, so the tiles and what that looks like, and then in relationship to the duplexes, what you'll be able to bring back. So I think we're going to need that brought back before at least I'd feel comfortable saying let's approve it and move forward.
So, Steph, I think rather than a motion, I think have you been able to write down the issues? I think Ken did a great job of just summarizing them. I don't know if there were other ones that you want to see come back.
No, and I agree with Ken, but I also want to be sensitive to the time process on this too. I don't know what that means. I mean, if we're going to be looking at this very, very soon, absolutely, but I'd want to hear that everybody's comfortable with a timeline of waiting.
When's the next meeting?
Well,
2 weeks.
Yeah. I don't know if we have anything for the agenda yet, but we could.
We don't, but if that's the only item on the agenda, it'll be a quick meeting. Yeah. It sounds like really the only thing we need to get is some examples so you can see what the roofing material looks like and some real-life examples in towns that you can drive by.
Oh, yeah.
And the duplex issues. So if Mr. Jenkins thinks he can have that in 2 weeks, we should be good.
And just throwing us out as a concern, too, and we don't have a full body here. We have someone new here next time. I mean, I hesitate having something else offered and pushing it off even further. So I don't know how we tackle that. Again, this is a new body here, so new process.
Well, my suggestion would be, why don't we shoot for 2 weeks to bring it back to the committee with those items addressed as discussed. Dara, why don't you, when you get a chance, see if you can reach out to Carl and see if he'll likely attend the next meeting and maybe share with him some of the discussion points, because I know he's already had the packet and he may or may not have looked at it yet. I don't know. But perhaps if you walk through what some of those changes he should expect, you'll also get a sense from him if that's accessible.
And it's my understanding that these are being recorded. They're not being live streamed, but this is recorded, so he would have an opportunity to listen to that too.
Correct.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think we got direction.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think that, let's see what we got on the agenda here. I think that may have been it. We also have item 6, reports from city staff, if any.
I have none today.
All right. Any other comments from the committee?
None.
Then we will adjourn at 10:03. Thanks.